On Tuesday, June 26, 2007, local peace activists and the raging grannies of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom rallied at the Army Recruitment Office on 41st Avenue in Capitola. The purpose of the demonstration was to call on the Army to stop recruiting young persons for the purpose of killing and to be killed, and they stand in opposition to what they call an illegal, immoral, and disastrous war that they want brought to an end. Before the rally got underway, I asked Staff Sergeant Andrew Bobo, a recruiter at the center, for an interview.
My name is Staff Sergeant Andrew Bobo. I'm a recruiter here in Capitola.
How long have you worked here?
A little over a year.
Maybe you could briefly describe your job here?
My job is to contact people that might find themselves interested in military service and give them the information they need to decide whether they are in fact interested or not. If they decide to join the military, we help them along.
Mm-hmm. So you contact people who are already expressing an interest, or do you go out and try to find people who may not have thought of joining the Army before?
We do both. If someone approaches us, we make sure that they're eligible and qualified to join the military. And if they are, we help them with all the paperwork required.
Mm-hmm. So there's a protest going on out here today. It's against the war in Iraq and calling for a withdrawal of U.S. troops. I'm wondering what your feelings and thoughts are on the planned protest today.
I've spent the last 14 years defending people's rights to gather peaceably and do their First Amendment thing, and I have no problem with it at all, really. It's peaceful assembly. If they don't decide to tear stuff up or throw rocks at me, I'm pretty content to let it go on.
What about the war? Can you express your point of view on that, or is that something that you are off limits to discuss in your position?
Well, we are. The war is a big subject in recruiting because you are dealing with people, and it is the military, and there is a war. But honestly, having been in Iraq for a year, I'm all for the war because I know that it's a good thing. Okay, that sounded badly. But I know that there is a need for us to be there at this point.
At this point, does that mean that you don't necessarily agree with the original intent to go in, but now that we're there, you think we need to stay the course and be there at this point? Or do you think that there was a reason to invade in the first place?
I've seen the videos. The original intent, the original official reason for invading Iraq was to take Saddam Hussein away from his weapons of mass destruction. I have seen the videos. We've captured the videos of Saddam Hussein nerve-gassing Kurdish villages in the north end of Iraq. So I know for a fact that there were weapons of mass destruction in there. That makes the original intent behind the invasion sound.
So these are old videos, though.
Yes, they are. However, I never heard any evidence that we'd actually disarmed this guy. And I also don't have any access to the higher levels of intelligence that we have had for quite a while. And because I am not privy to what goes on in the intelligence community, I don't really doubt their claims. We knew that he had the stuff 4 years before we kicked him out of Kuwait. And I never saw even a small shred of evidence that it was that we really disarmed him in any real way.
So you're in favor of the war. You went to Iraq. Can you talk about what you did in the year you were there?
During the year I was there, I went with an infantry company, and our job was to secure the city of Mosul, the east side of the river, and we acted as both police and as kind of a stand-in FBI. Our job was to find bad people and put them in jail if we could.
And how did you see that as part of the larger mission there?
Part of the larger mission? Honestly, rounding up bad guys in any situation is a good thing.
And these bad guys were who now?
Most of them were former members of the Ba'ath Party and senior members of the Republican Guard for the former regime. And then, of course, there were some Al-Qaeda cells that we tangled with every once in a while as well. But generally, the foot soldiers, we'd find on the streets, or people that would do the suicide IEDs, things like that, they were generally imported from other countries. We didn't fight a whole lot of Iraqis after the first few months we were there.
What about some of the criticisms of recruiting? I'm sure you've heard it, that people are misled, that they're told they'll get things that they don't get, that maybe there's been some really aggressive recruiting that's gone on where high school students have been pursued pretty heavily and deceived. I'm sure you've heard these kinds of criticisms. Can you respond to that?
We have rules in place for our own behavior, and we are not allowed to do anything deliberately deceptive. We have, when someone chooses to join the military, their contract actually has a clause in the very bottom, which actually spells out in plain English everything that the Army promises and everything the Army requires of them. So in the end, we can't lie to them, because it'll come out in their contract. When it comes down to it, we're salesmen. And if you sell a product and you overstate its abilities, the product, that person will not buy again, and he'll tell his friends not to buy again. And we can't afford that.
Did you see dead civilians in Iraq? Did you kill any civilians?
Nope, I did not kill any civilians. I never even shot at any. And I don't believe anyone in my experience, there might have been, but when I was present, we didn't shoot at civilians unless they were shooting at us first, which makes them not civilians. Since the advent of cover and concealment came into play during the Revolutionary War, there's really never been a time when war has not spilled over onto the local civilian population. And this is one of the first major wars in history fought in a city, because the open desert thing no longer applies. The open desert was where we would go out to practice shooting so that we were better at it when we got to the cities. Cities is where people go. And city warfare is very different because of the population density. You shoot a bullet into the sky in Santa Cruz, and it's got a significant likelihood to fall on the head of somebody, because bullets do have to land eventually.
So basically your attitude about it is that it's an unfortunate reality of war.
It is very much an unfortunate reality of war. And we have, again, tried to minimize it as much as possible.
Do you think things are better in Iraq now than they were before the U.S. invaded?
Absolutely. I know that when we got to Iraq, we took over a palace, the Palace of Mosul. Saddam had 13 or 14 palaces in the major cities. And when we moved in, we actually had to dismantle the rape room in the basement of one of the palaces. They have a room set aside in every palace for the raping and murdering of young women.
And how do you know that these rooms were used for that purpose, other than what the Army told you?
I saw the manacles and the bloodstains.
What about the situation now, where it seems like every other day we're hearing about another 125 civilians killed in a market, 90 people killed in a mosque there? It's such chaos now that there's really very little law in place, and it seems that the U.S. Army is only protecting the areas where there's lawmakers and the green zone, and there's just certain areas where the Army has a foothold. And it seems like the country overall is in chaos. It seems like an enormous mess now, and it's really hard to figure out how we're going to get out and how there could be a good outcome with the situation the way it is. So if you could just say your thoughts on what I've just said.
The current situation is we were always featured in the news as either, complete bumbling idiots or tyrannical monsters. And often we got both treatments in the same articles. But I can only picture that I know what we did, and I know what the newspaper said about my unit while we were there. And I can only picture bad news selling, because if I have to believe of my own unit what I have to believe about what we did versus what they said we did, I'm inclined to think that the newspaper's doing the same thing to the other units.
So things aren't bad in Iraq?
I'm not saying they're not bad. I'm saying they're not as bad as people make it out to be. And it's the newspapers. Bad news sells. And good news tends to not sell so well. So I think, I'm sure that there are a lot of issues still over there. I'm not saying it's some utopia thing and the newspapers are trying to hamstring us. I'm saying that I don't think it's as bad as they make it out to be, just from my own experiences and how the newspaper dealt with us, or the major news agencies, And we had embedded reporters from MSNBC. We had Nick Robertson from CNN. And it was, he was very good, by the way. He was very fair. But
so you think we're winning the war? Is that what you're saying?
I think that we are doing everything that can be expected of us. We are doing our part. And sometimes the Iraqis don't step up as much as they need to. If they would work a little harder for their own freedom and democracy, I think we'd be doing better. But I think that we're doing the best we can with what we're working with.
What do you think's going to happen in the coming years?
I think one of two things will happen. We either stay in there with either a methodology change, or we kind of stay in there and let these guys find a way to step up and phase ourselves away when they can actually take care of themselves. Or we do a massive pullout, and this all depends on the 2008 elections. And if we do this big, massive pullout, Iraq ceases to exist in its current format, and we have to go back in there because of a large destabilizing land war between Iran, Syria, and possibly Saudi Arabia.
What do you say? What would you say to people who feel like this invasion was a huge destabilizing force, not only in Iraq, which seems to be falling apart, but to the region, and that there's no way to install democracy, that it has to be something that comes from the grassroots up, and that this is a failure, and that no matter what we do, at some point, we're going to be pulling out and leaving a mess?
We are doing the best we can with what we got, and it really does depend on the Iraqi people at this point. We've set up the conditions for them to form their own democracy. They've done the voting thing, and the grassroots movement is there. We just got to get over some historical cultural issues. That's a cultural issue that there are some cultural issues they have to work through themselves.
And
just kind of the patriotism thing is a high and noble goal for any person to reach the love of country that most Americans have. But their culture has been scrabbling among the rocks for survival for a very long time. And their focus as a culture tends to be more on the immediate concerns of me and my family. And they are willing to, if it became a survival situation, like anybody, they would be willing to damage somebody near them in order to protect themselves or their family. But they actually view that as a very real possibility, a very real option. They have not gone beyond the self thing. It's hard for these guys who've lived the way they have for so long to view the nation as a self. National security is high above where these guys are thinking of when they're talking about taking care of themselves. They haven't reached that high on the loyalty chain, really. They're still so used to thinking in terms of small group dynamics that they can't even conceive of national security being of direct importance to them and their family.
After my conversation with recruiter and Staff Sergeant Andrew Bobo, I went downstairs to find out what was happening at the protest, which had gotten underway outside of the recruitment center. There I ran into cafe owner Michael McBride. Michael, what are your thoughts on the protest that's taking place here at the Army, Navy, Air Force recruiting offices today? It's an anti-war rally.
I think they're doing a real nice job of in a peaceful way, bringing this to people's thoughts, and I stand behind them in their peaceful effort to bring people's awareness to the war and what it's doing to our communities. So, yeah, they're a nice group of people expressing their thoughts in a very civilized way.
And Michael, you own a little cafe near here?
Yeah, I have a little restaurant right here in the building.
So you're not attending the protest. You just happen to be here because you have a business here and you heard it happening, so you came out.
That's right. That's right. But I went over to see what they're doing, and I applaud them. You know, they're doing a good job. But I think they're They need to put their message to the decision makers, the policy makers that actually have something to do with why we're at war. And I think the real place for them to be addressing this is to the President of the United States, to the White House.
So do you think they're in the wrong place? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think they're in the wrong place. I think that to bring it to people's attention is right, and to do it in a peaceful and organized way and civilized way is the right thing to do.
So how do you feel? I noticed you were chatting with some of the Navy folks. Are they upset about this, or what were you discussing?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think they're upset. I think they're very much realists about it, too, you know, that the people who are working here for the Navy, the Army, the Armed Services, these are people who are giving of themselves to serve their country, and they're not policymakers. They're doing a job for all of us. So, you know, I think they are good, decent, respectful people, and I don't see them rattled by this either. You know, this isn't, they don't take this personally. It's certainly not their decision, their policy, they follow orders.
May I ask you how you feel about the war, what your views on it are?
Oh, I'm vehemently opposed to it. I think that's the worst thing we could be doing is fighting a war, and especially over oil, and especially without it being in defense of our own freedom, our own country. We've gone and made a preemptive strike, and I think that we started it up where, you know, maybe there's other ways in this day and age that world pressure, political pressure, or whatever that might be, could do more than killing. So
were you opposed to it before it started?
From the first day, day one, I've been jumping up and down like a lunatic.
Thanks for speaking with me, Michael.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. But there were other business owners in the complex who expressed displeasure at the protest. I asked Joanne, owner of the Bridal Veil, if she felt that the protesters did not have a right to be there.
No, I don't. I don't think they have any right at all. If they want to do something, they should write to their congressman. They should call Washington. I do that all the time. If I have a problem, I call the source. This is not the source. These are just boys that are doing their job for the United States of America. They have to do what the commander-in-chief tells them to do. If they don't, they go to prison.
So you're here because you own a business that's in the same complex.
It has nothing to do with that. We're here because we're mothers and grandmothers, and we care what they're doing to our boys. We know them all personally. They're wonderful kids. They don't deserve this.
Uh-huh. They don't deserve what? Can you be specific?
They don't deserve to have all this going on in front of their offices. They have nothing to do with this. They are doing what they have to do. I don't even understand why these people are here.
Have you tried to talk to any of the protesters about why they're here?
Yes, I have. They're all peaceful people. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with these people. They're doing what they think is right. I mean, I have protested a few times in my life, but not like this. We're in the middle of a war. They're out there in Iraq. The boys really feel about that. They really feel bad about this. I've talked to them after the protesters have left. They're not happy about this. It hurts them very much.
They're not happy about what?
Protesters being here. They're trying to tell them they don't like to go to war either. They have families, they have wives and children. But they're here because they have to obey the commander-in-chief.
Some of the protesters are saying they're here because the recruiting practices are misleading, and that sometimes people are told they'll receive certain bonuses or things that they don't get. They're told that they'll only be in for a certain period of time, and they find out later they've committed to 8 years when they thought it was only two or something. So I think it seems that part of it is that they're upset with some of the practices of the recruiters, and that they want to talk with them about that.
I've asked the recruiters about that because I was concerned, and they said that doesn't happen. They said if that does happen, it's not right. But they have told me that it doesn't happen.
The recruiters have told you it doesn't happen?
Yes, I've talked to them, each and every one of them, personally.
Okay, well, thank you for talking to me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
After speaking with Joanne, owner of the Bridal Veil, I went out front to check out what was going on at the protest. And I spoke with Dora Rosen. She's with the GI Rights Hotline.
My name is Dora Rosen, and I am a volunteer GI rights counselor with the Santa Cruz groups and Santa Cruz and San Francisco hotline groups. And I'm here today, of course, because I totally believe the less people that join the military, the less warfare there'd be in the world, the less broken lives and homes there would be here in the U.S. as well as wherever we're fighting.
So do you think that this type of protest is effective, is an effective means of stopping the war?
You know what, I think it's one of the arms or branches of stopping the war. to come in and actually be at a recruiting office. Maybe we will have the effect of making people who are coming in to be recruited to stop and think about what they're doing. And I'm here today. I'm with the GR Rights Hotline, so let me give our number out. It's locally, if you're calling from an 831 area code, you can call us directly at 359-0202, and that is right with the Santa Cruz Hotline Group. And then the 1-800 number will be routed to the group that takes your area code, and it's 1-800-394-9544. And you can also go by the Resource Center for Nonviolence if you live in Santa Cruz at 515 Broadway, because that's where we have our meetings and have some of our literature. So also I'd hope by that we're on a busy street, and so hopefully some people going by, maybe it'll give them a little push and get them more motivated to fight against the war.
Can you explain to me what the GI Rights Hotline is?
The GR Rights Hotline, it's not just for people who are in the military. We get a lot of calls from their family members and friends who are concerned about, I mean, there are just so many aspects to it. I'd say about half our calls right now are from people who have gone AWOL, which is absent without leave, or have an unauthorized absence, which is the same thing. Those two terms mean the same thing. It just depends on which branch you're in. And people are calling us. They want help. They want to know how to turn themselves back in so they can be discharged. And then we have a numerous amount of calls from people who actually have severe medical problems, and a lot of times there are things that have happened to them while they were in combat or while they were in training. So it's injuries that were caused by being in the military while they were on duty, and yet the military is not addressing their problems or giving them a discharge. And actually that's the reason why a number of people go AWOL. And then we have a lot of people who are calling because their family situations have changed since they joined the military. Like maybe there's one guy who called me. His wife was having a very difficult pregnancy, and there was nobody else that could take care of her. She was told she had to have complete bed rest except when she went to the doctor. And the military, all he wanted is he just wanted to be reassigned to a base closer to her home. And then we'll have other cases. People call. They're the only person that can help. One of their parents, say, who's in a, you know, very, very ill, and the military won't discharge them, so they go AWOL, or they call us because they want to know how to get a discharge for hardship or dependency to help out their family member.
So what about some of the literature that the military puts out, or what they tell people when they're recruiting? Do you advise people, is that part of what the GI Rights Hotline does, is advise people on the reality of military service?
Yes, we do. And since we're at a recruiting office, I'd like to go into things the recruiters commonly say. But also, as far as their literature goes, I have a nephew who's in the California National Guard. He's still in the Guard. He served for a year in Iraq for most of 2005, basically. And he was saying before he left, I mean, there's guys already in the military, and they're trying to enlist people before they even, he still has several years on his contract. They were trying to get him to re-up even when he was in Iraq. And then one thing he said is they were showing him all these really fancy things about you could train to do all these, you know, fantastic things like do helicopter rescues, you know, all kinds of fun things that somebody like him who's real athletic and snowboards thinks that he'd like to learn how to do. And then he's saying he almost re-upped, and then he thought, what am I doing? What am I thinking? So that's the kind of things, I mean, this guy who's like 30 years old, right? And so then that's the kind of thing they pitch to high school students, like, you'll do this, you'll learn how to, you'll work on these super duper ultra fantastic airplanes or helicopters, or, you know, you'll be around all this kind of fun, you know, that's how they pitch it. You'll be around fun weaponry, you'll be learning all this technological stuff, you'll be training for your jobs in the future, which actually a lot of military training doesn't cross over whatsoever to civilian life. And so that's one of the ways that it's pitched. And that's one of the things, of course, the literature emphasizes, all that kind of gee whiz stuff, you know, not the kind of thing of you might be blown up by an IED and have half your skull blown off, so you have to go around and wear some kind of football helmet apparatus until we can get around to doing reconstructive surgery, and even it might be really, you know, it might take you years to even walk or talk again.
Of course, well, this is advertising like any other. I mean, of course they're going to emphasize what they consider to be the positive aspects of military service because they want people to join the military. So it's advertising.
Exactly. It's advertising. It's advertising that if we pay taxes, it's paid for with our tax dollars, and it's being taken away from money that could go into other things. But yes, it is advertising, and there's another program called the Delayed Entry Program, and that's how I think about half the people in the military come in through that. It's pitched specifically to high school students. You can sign up even in your junior year, and then what happens is you're saying that you will enlist and go into the military after you graduate. It's the usual way. But somebody, until the day where somebody goes in and starts their training, they can get out of the DEP program. It's very easy. The basic thing is you don't have to show up for your ship date, or you can also write a letter to the head of your recruiting station and say, I've changed my mind, you know, just give whatever reason caused you to change your mind. And the military has to accept anything that's in their regulations, and that person can get out. Well, the recruiters routinely tell people who are trying to get out of that, oh, you can't get out of it, you know, you can be thrown in jail. If they think the person might not be an American citizen or a family members who aren't citizens, they'll say, you can, you know, you and your whole family can be deported, you'll never get a college loan, you'll never get a job. I mean, there's just all kind of arm twisting and manipulation that goes on. But people who are in DEP, they can get out. It's the easiest thing. We love to get those calls. And then what I always tell people is people call up, a lot of people are in DEP will call up and say these things, or people who want to join the military, and I'll tell them, you know, just like you said, it's advertising, and the recruiters are salespeople, and they're salespeople who are totally, they're salespeople who are under extreme pressure. It makes death of a salesman look like, you know, a cakewalk. And so, I mean, because they have these quotas, and they're under very, very intense pressure to meet them, and they're in the military, so they're in that position of they have to take orders, and sometimes they're threatened with, I mean, some of them have seen combat, but some of them are threatened with, if you don't meet your goals, we're going to ship you out, and you're going to go into combat. You were saying that this recruiter here said they never lie, they never mislead people. I hope that's true, because if that's true, one thing that really people should be aware of, a lot of times it happens when people go in to be recruited, it's very strongly suggested to them they not mention any medical, mental, or physical health problems they've had in the past, any conditions they have. And then later when they join and they see what it's really like in boot camp, they want to get out. If they had made those conditions known to begin with, they would have been able to get out. And that's a case where they should definitely call us, especially in their first 6 months of service. But most recruiters, I hope this guy did not lie to you, and he is an honest recruiter. Most of them will lie and encourage people who are signing up to lie to. And one of the lies they often tell are, your job rating, you will never be shipped into combat because of your job rating. Well, that's not true. And plus, your job rating can be changed at the military whim. It's right in the contract. When somebody signs up, they have committed to 8 years, no matter what the recruiter tells them. A lot of times they'll just say, you're in for 2 years. Well, that's 2 years active duty, or in the reserves, that's 2 years of drilling reserve. But they still have the rest of the 8 years to make up as a kind of like, it's called inactive status. But people now have been called out of inactive status and are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. I have family friends in that position.
What about the college money that people get and the other bonuses and things that they get, sometimes just cash?
Thank you for asking that, George, because really the military actually makes money off that, because the first year that somebody is in service, $100 is automatically taken out of their paycheck to cover college benefits. And few people, unfortunately, ever get a chance to use those. And my nephew's a prime example of that. That's why he went into the National Guard. And just because of the kind of job he has, it turns out he doesn't really need to go to graduate school for that. And so, you know, that's $1,200 that he lost, and his pay wasn't that much to begin with. And a lot of people, if you don't get an honorable discharge, you're not eligible. There are lots of things that make you ineligible, and then there are lots of reasons people don't end up going to college and using that. Anyway, there are a lot of requirements you have to meet to get that money. And as to the enlistment bonuses, yes, sometimes people do get bonuses, and it is good money. But on the other times, a lot of people are promised good bonuses and don't get them.
How much of that is the recruiter's responsibility, though? Because they might tell someone something they think is true, and then later it turns out there's something that comes up, or they didn't jump through the right hoops or whatever. How much of that is the recruiter's responsibility, really?
Absolutely none of it. The recruiter's only responsibility is to get those recruits. Whatever they say, to get them to buy it, you know? It's like when you buy a car, it's the car salesman's responsibility to sell you that car. It's not the car salesman's responsibility to make sure that the mechanics do a good job on the car, you know, and things like that. And I don't want to say, I mean, there are some recruiters that really care about the people they've recruited and try to help them, But when it comes down to it, not only is it not their responsibility, it's not their job, and they really can't do anything about it. And plus, they're not off. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some of them are officers. But on the other hand, they're not in a high enough ranking position to be able to really help the people, you know?
Is there an issue of accountability as well that, you know, a corporal or just a three-stripe sergeant wouldn't be punished for lying or deceiving people who are being recruited?
Well, a lot of times, if you read things, and I can't remember any of these people's names offhand, but I've read several articles and heard interviews with people who were recruiters, and they pretty much say that, you know, they were pretty much rewarded for lying because really their job is to get the recruits. And the military, you know, when people are caught, like that guy that was caught because he had it on tape telling people how to fake urine test to test negative on drug tests, or people that said, we'll show you how to make it look like you have a high school diploma. I mean, those individual people might have had something happen to them, but those are really, really common practices because the bottom line is get those recruits.
And once they're in, it's really difficult to fight the system.
It is difficult, and that's why they should call us at 359-0202 or 1-800-394-9544. And if necessary, we can get people legal referrals. Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And that was Dora Rosen from the GI Rights Hotline. I spoke with her in front of the Army Recruitment Center on 41st Avenue on Tuesday, June 26th. She was there as part of a protest against the war in which 10 people were arrested, including a number of members of the Raging Grannies and members of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I then spoke with Maureen Smith. She was there to protest the war and to call for the impeachment of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney.
My name's Maureen Smith, and I'm here to oppose the military recruitment for an illegal, immoral war. I'm here to support people who want to take direct action if that happens. I'm here to just express my outrage at what's going on in this country with our war machine, and also to support impeachment, which you may not see signs here today, but most of these people here are for impeachment and want our congressman to join Dennis Kucinich in H.R. 333 to impeach Dick Cheney.
Has there been much reaction from passersby or people driving by or people who own businesses within this complex or anything, or even the recruiters? Have you talked to anyone who's not part of the protest?
There's been some nasty comments by a very few people, two that I can recall, and this is 2 hours now. There's been a whole lot of friendly waving and honking by people driving by, and I haven't talked to any recruiters myself, so I can't say anything about what's happening with them.
I noticed upstairs that there was a giant poster at the Army office saying that people can get $20,000 enlistment bonus, they can get $70,000 in student loans repaid when they join up, and there's quite a lot of seemingly positive things that people can receive for joining the military, and some people are trying to enter the office and feeling upset and angry that they can't because they want some of these. They might want to enlist. What would you say to them if they were expressing frustration to you?
I would tell them that they can't really trust what they are being offered. If they don't have every single thing in a written contract, they can forget it. However, I would tell them that I'm there as a mother and a grandmother, and if they were my child, I would urge them not to do this. I would use everything in my power to prevent them from doing this because I brought them into the world in order for them to live and not to kill people or be killed by others in a war.
But if the war, I mean, a lot of the arguments I've heard upstairs, and I spoke to a military mother whose daughter is in the military and she's very supportive of the war, and she feels that this is a good mission, and that in war, well, sometimes people have to die, and that's an unfortunate reality. What would you say to someone who felt that, you know, they understand why you don't want you wouldn't want a child to fight and die in a war, but that might be a necessary reality.
I would ask her why she would want her child to die for Halliburton or General Electric or any of the other companies that are making money off of war, because that's what war is about, a few people making a lot of money off the suffering of other human beings.
Thanks for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
Next, we'll hear from Ellie Foster. She was one of the 10 arrested and one of the raging grannies protesting on June 26th. She gave this talk in front of the Army Recruitment Center right before protesters went inside to try to speak with recruiters.
You've tricked our children. Sometimes you've tried to trick them, and sometimes you've tricked them to get them into the Army, into the services, to kill. You tell them it's glorious to put on a uniform and go to war, and you have to protect us. Bombs don't protect. Bombs kill. Cluster bombs kill. You've tried to tell us that nuclear weapons are good if we own them. Nuclear weapons can destroy the whole human race. They could destroy the whole Earth. It's time for the truth to be told, and you listen to the truth. It's time now for our turning. It's time for our government, this our government of the people. And it's time for us and for our government to stop lying, to turn to truth, to turn to peace. Instead of soldiers to kill, let's learn to send peace envoys to Iraq, to wherever. It's a lesson for the whole human race. Send us grannies to Iraq. We'll cry with the grannies there, and we'll try to comfort their children, and their children's children, and we'll cradle your grandbabies. Send us to Iraq. We will learn with the people in Iraq. We'll learn what the ways of peace are. But right here and right now, we're going to go into this recruitment office, and we're going to talk to our grandchildren there, if they're there. Or we're going to talk to the young people, and we're saying, oh, don't go. And we're going to talk to the recruiters. We tell the recruiters, forget your quota. Don't trick our grandchildren into killing, into losing their lives, too. And then we'll tell the military complex, that's enough. It's time for turning now. Stop war. But our message is much stronger than rage. Our message is peace. And the way to peace is peace.
And that was Ellie Foster, a member of the Raging Grannies. She was among 10 who were arrested on Tuesday, June 26, at the Army Recruitment Center in Capitola. She gave that talk right before she and other protesters attempted to enter the Army Recruitment Center to speak with recruiters. And next, we'll hear from David Hoffendahl. He spoke at the rally about some literature that the Army sent to his 16-year-old son, Trevor. He and his son, Trevor, were among 10 who were later arrested at the Army Recruitment Center.
A few weeks ago, my 16-year-old son Trevor received this advertisement from the Army. On the front page, as you can see, the caption reads, "Put your 2,436 hours of video game to good use." And underneath it's an actual photo of the control panel of the screen of the tank. And in the screen are four men in a crosshair. Good use. That's a lie. It's common knowledge that the Iraqi war was built on lies. No weapons of mass destruction. No ties with Al-Qaeda. Even former generals who were stationed in Iraq are speaking out against the war, against the lies that were told to us and told to them. The second part, the caption on the next page reads, "Get behind the controls of the world's most advanced technology." The photo is of a man behind a very sophisticated looking gun on some kind of tank. The world's most advanced technology. That is not a lie. The problem is, the technology is to make killing more efficient. In the Korean War, over 40,000 Americans died. 4 million Koreans died. In the Vietnamese War, 50,000 Americans died. And 5 million Vietnamese died. Now in the war in Iraq, with over 3,000 U.S. soldiers dead and over 600,000 Iraqi casualties, the ratio is 200 to 1. So my question is, when is war not a slaughter? Over 40 years ago, Martin Luther King said, "The bombs of Vietnam exploded home. They destroy the hopes and possibilities of a decent America." This statement holds true in an Iraqi war. Martin Luther King also said that the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is our own government. These are the hard words of a true patriot. He also spoke of a love for this country and a faith that it can be restored to righteousness and for it to be what our founding fathers meant it to be. This is what I want. I love this country and I want this dream to come true with all my heart. So what I'm asking you today is to search your own hearts and find your own way to stop this war, to stop the killing. We all know what's going down. Let's figure out a way to end it. Trevor's right here. Where are you, Trevor? Gentleman in the black shirt, my 16-year-old son who received this ad. And I have two more sons, Russell's 11 and Benjamin's 10. What I want is for when they are men, I want them to be proud of this country. The very least I can do is stand up to here today and speak out in any way I can to help stop this war. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that was David Hoffendahl, father of three sons, speaking out against the Iraq War and talking about some of the literature sent to his son by the U.S. military recruiters. Meanwhile, a couple of young men exited the Marine recruitment office and walked through the crowd at the rally. I approached them and asked if I could get their opinion on the protest.
There certainly were a lot of people out there.
How do you feel about what their message is, which is essentially, it looked like, pulling the troops out, bringing them home, ending the war?
I don't think we should quit. I mean, if we keep doing that every time we encounter a little resistance, it's going to make America look weak.
Did you agree with the invasion of Iraq?
I think we could have stood to not go there. I mean, did a lot of good things for, you know, I mean, human rights weren't doing too well over there. So, but I mean, more my concern would be we shouldn't quit.
So do you think that the folks that are out here, do you have any opinion on their point of view? Do you think they're foolish, or do you just think they're expressing their view and that's fine?
It's kind of sad. I mean, the 60s are over. Grow up, you know, I guess, and probably get a job. I mean, if you're there out here on a Tuesday in the middle of the day, you know, it's probably not the time for it, I would think.
Okay, well, thanks for your comments. Did you want to say something?
Similar.
So you were out here, you were just passing by this peace rally in front of the recruitment center. What were your thoughts?
It's good to see that people are using their civil rights and protesting. I disagree with what they're protesting about, but, you know, it's admirable that they believe in a cause enough to be out here on a Tuesday.
You disagree with it. Can you explain a little further?
I think a large part of it is the fact that we have an all-volunteer army. A lot of the problem is that these people are kind of seems an anti-armed forces point of view, and nobody who's gone into the armed forces did so under duress or not knowing that this was a possibility that they could be called on.
Do you think the war was a good idea?
No comment on that one.
Would you consider going to Iraq to fight with the U.S. military?
I would consider it.
Have you considered it?
Briefly, not particularly much. I'm not much of a military man.
So you're not interested in going over there at any point?
I'm not interested in enlisting in the armed services in general, regardless of what it would entail.
Why not?
Not one type of man who wants to be told what he has to do for 4 to 8 years.
After speaking with the two young men who had left the Marine recruitment office, I went back over to the rally to see what was happening.
What's going on up here?
Oh, well, there are a number of people here attempting to enter the Army recruiting office and speak with the recruiter. They are being denied entry. They did allow one young man to go in who's 16 years old, so pre-enlistment age, and he had an appointment apparently. I'm not clear about that. And another young man who's in his 20s, I believe, is attempting to enter the office, and they're denying him access.
The one who...
Are we trying to go to another office or not?
More to follow. Let's go.
That was activist Louis LaFortune. After I spoke with him briefly, protesters went downstairs to the Marine, Air Force, and Navy offices to try to enter there. Earlier, some protesters had been inside of the Navy recruitment office speaking with recruiters there. But now all three offices were closed and locked. So protesters gathered around the Army recruitment office where they were still being blocked entry by the recruiters. Protesters read hundreds of names of some of the over 600,000 killed in Iraq, including Iraqi civilians and American troops. Meanwhile, the Army recruiter who was blocking the door and preventing the entry of the protesters into the office received a phone call from his superior.
So, Jan Harwood and I would like to lead a memorial to the 3,500 American women and men who have given their lives on the lie that this war was the best response our nation could make to the tragedies of terrorism. And we also remember 655,000 Iraqi men, women, and children who have given their lives at the hand of an invading and occupying military acting in our name with our tax funding sent by our elected president. We remember these dead as we read the names of these victims of war.
Mustafa Hassan Twafek.
We remember Jacob H. Alcott.
Ayman Fathel Ali Akalbe. Zara Abed Hassan.
We remember Richard.
Sorry, I'm bucking out.
Hererma.
We're I'm kind of blocking a doorway Ella from a bunch of unhappy people
Razen.
Right now.
We remember Michael.
We've been invaded.
L. Ford.
Karar yeah. Saleh Ali.
Well, we got the cops. They're trying to get their supervisor
Bobby
up here,
Mendez.
But.
Karar Salil Ali Al Musani, age 10.
Hey, Sergeant Vasquez.
Age 10.
We remember Mark right. A. Wall.
That's my boss.
Mohammed Abed Al Karim, age 10.
We remember Matthew A. Weber.
Sher Glel Salm Dush Al Gorain, age 11.
We remember Jose Gomez.
Hamed Hassan Gassem El Kefake, age 11.
We remember Brian A. Perlam.
Ali Freck Kamel Naga Almost, age 12.
Many of those that were standing in the doorway to the Army recruitment office and attempting to enter and speak with recruiters were older women, members of the Raging Grannies. They were decked out in straw hats, flowers, and colorful aprons. And they read a prepared statement to the Army recruiter who was blocking the door. In the background, you'll hear an angry mother who had come into the Army Recruitment Center to stand with the recruiters as a counter-protest. She was angrily yelling at one of the protesters who had gotten inside, saying that she felt that they should be fighting the terrorists over there and not the U.S. Army at home. And at the end, you'll hear an Army representative entering the recruitment office, being allowed entry at the same time the protesters refused to move and allow the Army recruiters to shut the door.
And causing birth defects, leukemia, and other adverse health effects for our own service people, as well as innocent citizens. We are raging because our country is building many permanent bases in Iraq. We are raging at our citizens' growing losses of First Amendment rights. We are enraged about the use of torture by U.S. forces against detainees. The raging grannies firmly believe that the Iraq war has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. The Iraq war has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. The Iraq war has everything to do with the U.S. controlling access to Middle Eastern oil. The Iraq war is an illegal, immoral war that has everything to do with U.S. world domination. We insist that recruiters tell the truth to the young people who come to you with a mission to serve their country. I went online. I have a copy of this.
Awesome.
Good, and here's a copy of mine, too. Just go read them. Give it to your friends.
Let
your friends read them.
Okay, can you do me a favor and back up now? Because I can't even get in there.
Well, we have some names to read.
Okay, back up for me. You can step back for me.
We'll go in. We don't want to move back.
The country has moved backwards. And this is just bullshit. The Constitution, which gives you the right to do this and insult every goddamn person who's ever worn a uniform.
I made several attempts to enter the Army recruitment office myself. I could see that there was a couple of young men inside who had come in thinking about enlisting, as well as a very angry woman identifying herself as an Army mom. I wanted to get their point of view, and so I asked the recruiter several times if I could enter. He finally agreed.
I'm an Army mom.
Okay, can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Why are you here today?
To support the recruiters.
Because you knew there was going to be a protest?
Yeah, I knew that Code Pink was going to be here, and the Raging Grannies and their lies.
So, how are you feeling about the protest right
now? I am furious. I am absolutely furious. To me, I have read their websites, I have read their information, and I have found that a lot of it isn't factual. And the fact that they are demanding this, the troops want to finish their mission. Whether they agree with it or not, it's not the troops. They should be supporting the troops. And I wonder how many care packages they have sent to the troops. They say they care so much about them. I don't see them caring about them. I see their political agenda, which is anti-military.
So when you say their position, I'm assuming you're saying is to pull out the troops now. Is that what you're
because if say they got their way and we pulled out the troops this afternoon, Cambodia after Vietnam would look like a picnic. The Iraqis would be decimated because those people are eating their own, they're killing their own, and we're the only way that's going to stop. And if it's not in Iraq, they're going to go into Israel, and they're already here in the United States. And their whole point is to take out our way of life.
You've said that some of what you read on the websites for Code Pink and Raging Grannies, etc., was not Veterans for Peace, was not factual.
Courage to Resist.
Can you give me maybe one example of something that you saw that you felt was not factual?
Oh, there's so many. My mind just went blank. Of course, hold on. I'm really upset.
I
am very upset. The fact that they say that our troops have been killing innocent women and children. It's war. Bad shit happens. Bad things happen. Our troops do everything in their power not to hurt the innocent. But the terrorists hide behind women and children so that they'll set up in a house full of people, so that because they know that the soldiers will have to shoot in that area, and we won't, and we do not torture detainees down in Guantanamo, Gitmo. They are so overstating this torture, and they are not just sheep herders and farmers who are sitting in Gitmo. They are people who were picked up while trying to kill our soldiers. They are our enemy. And it seems to me that instead of protesting the troops and the war machine, as they call it, they might want to do a little investigating into the terrorists and what their whole purpose is, which is to basically wipe us off the map.
You say that the protesters here and Code Pink and these other organizations are anti-military and that they don't support the troops. On the other hand, there is those in those organizations who make the argument that they're the ones truly supporting the troops because they're calling for them to be removed from harm's way and not to fight a war for oil, etc. How would you respond to that argument?
For one thing, we are not fighting for oil. If we were fighting for oil, you'd be paying a buck a gallon by now. Another thing is, you can tell they have not talked to many soldiers and they do not understand the soldier mentality. They are there. They want to finish the mission. They are there doing their jobs. And saying that you want to bring them home, that's fine. You can say that all you want, but respect the troops' choices.
So you think most of the folks in the military want to remain there?
The reenlistment quotas are so astronomically up. There are people, soldiers, standing in the sandbox in front of a flag after just coming back from a mission, holding one of their buddies in their arms as he's dying, reenlisting. They're there for their brothers.
You say you have a son in the military?
I have a daughter in the military.
A daughter. And where is she?
She's in Georgia.
Has she been to Iraq?
No.
Will she go?
She might. You never know. You know, it's as the contract says.
She in the Army?
Yes, she's in the Army. She's in the Veterinary Corps. And like it says in the contract, wherever the Army sends you is where you go.
So you're here because you're a military mom and you want to stand with the recruiters today?
Yes. Because I also want to stand with the kids that want to come and enlist. My daughter made the choice in high school. It was her choice. She went up to the recruiter and wanted to look into it. She did. She decided she wanted to go in. It was her choice. They are trying to take away other people's choices, and that, to me, isn't very tolerant.
What would you say to the argument that many of the people who work for the GI Rights Hotline and others make, that often recruiters can be misleading?
The thing is, there are bad people. I mean, you've got 2 million soldiers. There's going to be a couple of, you know, wing nuts. It's just like in any city. Recruiters do... I've heard the thing where they say, he told me I wasn't going to war. All I know is the recruiters I've talked to, and I've talked to quite a few, they wouldn't say that. That's their job. If they get caught, it's not good for them.
What about, like, bonuses that people are promised that they never receive, or college money that is not as much as they were...
Well, we're talking bureaucracy here. We're talking the government. Yeah. You know, I mean, excuse me, but the government is very ineffective at running anything well, and you have, like I said, 2 million people, and... It happens a lot less than the media would have you believe.
What about some of the claims that are made that high school students are heavily pursued, even without their parents' knowledge, and that sometimes recruiters will be kind of almost predatory in their way of pursuing young people and maybe even saying some misleading things to get them in, but then once they got them in, they've done their job. I mean, these are some of the reasons I think that people are here, is that they feel that this kind of stuff goes on, and are you just saying that it doesn't?
Well, I would like to see their resources. I would like to see where they're getting these facts. I would like to see the percentage. I would like to see the numbers. See, this is one thing these people do not come up with, are the resources. I have been reading the military blogs for almost 3 years now, and I'm getting my stuff from boots on the ground, from soldiers who are there, soldiers who have their own opinions, and they write about it now. And I think these people should spend a little time talking to more soldiers than just reading the New York Times, the LA Times, the Boston Globe, who definitely have an agenda, which is not that pro-military. And I was there during Vietnam, and I saw what they did to our soldiers then. We, the soldiers, didn't lose the war. The Congress and the people in America lost the war. And this is what's happening again.
I just have one more question for you. You're clearly very supportive of the troops, and you think the mission in Iraq is good. What about the Iraqi people and their choice? Before the war, there was massive protests in major cities in Iraq calling for the U.S. not to invade. And polls show that the vast majority of Iraqis want U.S. troops to leave. How do you feel about their choice in the matter?
Well, that's an old poll where the 70%, and that was a poll that was loaded that said 70% of Iraqis want us to leave. Right now, the surge is working. There are Iraqis in very bad areas, heavily, what's his name, al-Sadr people, who are working with our coalition troops to turn in the terrorists, because they're finally seeing that the terrorists are worse than the U.S. soldiers. They don't want us there. Of course they don't want us there. It's their country. But there's people who are seeing the medical care getting better. There's people who are seeing there's more electricity throughout the country than there was during Saddam Hussein's time. The reason that they still have limited electricity is because there is a more demand for it, because everybody has cell phones and everybody has satellite dishes. And everything in their house you plug in. They have air conditioners all over. So they are able to get this stuff now because the economy is picking up. There's a few parts of Iraq that are horrible. Baghdad, the triangle of whatever that, I can't think of what
Sunni
it is.
Triangle.
That's it. Thank you. The Sunni triangle. But for the first time, people are feeling safer because we're routing Al-Qaeda and the Syrians and the Iranians that are coming over and killing these people. They're getting tired of watching their families die from other Arabs. Or Iran is Persian. They're not Arabs.
Well, thanks for talking with me. I really appreciate you talking with me and getting your point of view.
Yes.
After speaking with Deborah, who identified herself as an Army mom, I approached a couple of young men who said they were there because they were thinking about enlisting. As I approached, they were in the middle of a heated debate with a peace protester who had made it inside of the Army Recruitment Center. I managed to interview one of the young men.
To go and kill people.
That's what a military is.
Not
their job is to protect us against people who are violently inclined.
Don't other countries have a base on our country? All the what are the buildings called where the other countries have their buildings on our in our country?
But those are for dealing with the United Nations. So they have their.
We have bases there.
I don't understand why that's a protest here. If these people have a problem, they should go to government offices. Not recruiters. I came in here. They told me, "What are you doing? We're fighting a war. Why would you want to join during a time of war?"
We're here to protect.
And so they're not lying.
You that are here.
So I don't see the purpose of this protest. It's inconveniencing my life because I'm thinking about joining the Army. I know these points of view, but they're not mine. My point of view is that Saddam Hussein killed over 300,000 Kurds, was quite the evil man, and
if
people are so against this war, why wasn't there the same protest when we went into Albania or Somalia, where similar guys were killing similar people, and nothing happened? Clinton went in. There were no protests.
You're here today to.
I'm here to talk to a recruiter about my ASVAB score and see what my options are joining the Army.
And what do you hope to do if you do join the Army?
I'm thinking about going military intelligence or tanks, and I'd like to serve my country because I believe that I was raised by the society and I owe something to the American government because of the freedoms it's granted me. If I was called on to go to Iraq, I would go to Iraq. It'd be something I'd do as a duty.
What would they be training you? Will you get training?
Thank you for talking to me. Appreciate it. Can you share your first name?
No.
Okay, thank you.
After speaking with the young man who was thinking of enlisting in the Army, I went back outside and spoke with some of the peace protesters who were still gathered around the doorway, hoping to get in and speak with Army recruiters. I asked Anita Heckman, who is on the staff at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and Sophie Brinker, who is an intern at the center, why they were at the protest.
I'm here to support others who have something to say about how we should stop the war, how we should not encourage more people to be recruited to go and kill people and be killed in the name of our country.
I have a lot of friends who are interested in joining the Army, and so I'm really interested in getting more information and finding alternate things that you can do instead of joining the Army and telling my friends about them.
Some of the folks inside the recruiting center, there's a military mother in there, there's a couple of young men that came to enlist today, and they're very upset about the protest, and they feel that this is the wrong place to be, that they're simply following orders, and that people should be protesting in a government office where decisions are made, not they feel they're just following orders. So how would you respond to their feeling that this is unfair to them because they didn't make the decision to go to war?
Well, my guess is they'll have other opportunities to sign up a different day if it's not today, if that's really their choice. But perhaps by our presence today, maybe it will make them start thinking about what an alternative might be, what they might do instead of signing up. That's what we're here for, to present an alternative, because you don't always get the information about what you might do instead of joining the military.
Did you want to say something
about that? Well, I think this is the place where it all starts. I think this is where the people come, and that's where, and this is where the people come to sign up, and I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to teach them about.
I also asked Richard, a veteran and a member of Veterans for Peace, why he was at the protest.
Because I think that these wars are wrong, the rationale for the wars is wrong. There's no reason for the U.S. military to be prosecuting these wars in the Middle East. It's creating harm for America and Americans for years to come, generating ill will through an aggressive foreign policy. It's bankrupting the infrastructure at home. And I was just reading something that I think is a question that got to the heart of the matter, and that's this. It's a short paragraph. Read, well, if you stop to think about it for a moment, what punishment would be just, proper, and fitting for such beast in human form only who have quite literally, knowingly, and radioactively contaminated not only several nations, but an entire planet for all eternity?
What is that referring to?
I think it's referring to depleted uranium that spread all over the Middle East. And correct or not, I suppose it's a possibility that it could not be. But what if it is correct? What if our military actions over there are contaminating the planet for all eternity? Is this something we want to be doing? And who's asking these questions? And why are we doing this? This is something that I'm asking myself, and I think we should be asking each other, we should be asking our government, and we have to maybe be responsible to the world for what we're doing.
After speaking with Richard, I approached Todd Matthews of MCM Diversified, the building management company.
I'm here to represent all of the tenants' interests to make sure that their rights are observed.
Have you been successful in doing that?
Today? Partially.
What do you mean? What's happened that wasn't?
Well, the good part is that they are the people who've been out front, which is what we've agreed to, and what in the past, the way we've worked everything out, is we've established a designated protest demonstration area out front. And we're requesting all the demonstrators to stay there.
And some haven't.
And some haven't.
And where are they?
And now they're in front of the Army office, which...
Which you would like them to leave. Have you made any effort to get them to move?
We've requested that they go back out to the designated protest area.
How do you feel about the protest? Do you want to share your thoughts on that at all?
My particular feelings are irrelevant here. I'm here on a professional basis, not on a personal.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to me.
Back at the entrance to the Army Recruitment Center, the raging grannies were still there in the doorway, hoping to get in, keeping the door open, although the Army recruiters were trying to shut it. And they sang a number of songs, including this one.
Ready?
Let's bring all my glasses. Our children home, back from the bushes warm, back from the bushes warm. Back from the bushes war, let's bring all our children home. Back from the bushes war, gonna take this war no more. We ain't gonna take this war no more. We ain't gonna take this war no more. 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 Ain't gonna take this war no more.
We're gonna stand on the street and shout, stop all the killing now.
Stop all the killing now. Stop all the killing now. We're gonna stand on the street and shout, stop all the killing now. Stop all the killing now. Ain't gonna take this war no more. 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 Ain't gonna take this war no more.
Not gonna tell folks how they should live. It's not our right to do. It's not our right to do. It's not our right to do. Not gonna tell folks how they should live. It's not our right to do. It's not our right to do. We ain't gonna take this war no more. We ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more. Take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more.
This war is our country's shame. We kill for oil and power. We kill for oil and power. We kill for oil and power. This war is our country's shame. We kill for oil and power. This war no more. We ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more. We ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more. Ain't gonna take this war no more.
While about 20 to 30 protesters were upstairs at the Army Recruitment Office, trying to enter and being refused, there was a good number down on the street still as well, protesting on 41st Avenue.
My name is Barry Boone. I'm a home care worker in SEIU 6434.
And why are you here today?
I'm here because I'm a stepmom, and both of my kids are like 19 and 20. One of them is not really functional on his own. He's been in the system, mental health system. He was in a foster home. When he turned 18, they kicked the kids out of the foster home. He's on his own now. He doesn't want to go to war, but he's trying to figure out how to get the resource to do what he wants to do. And there's just a whole range of kids like him. It's just they can't function, and the military is lowering their standards. And it's like, okay, you know, you need more discipline in your life. you don't have any place to live, you can't afford to go to college, you can't find a job, join us, we'll train you, we'll give you money, we'll do this, that, and the other thing. And so it's the only option for a lot of kids because the government is, because of the war, they're cutting back on all these programs for kids.
Back upstairs, Todd Matthews, the representative for MCM Diversified, the building management company, warned protesters that if they did not step away from the door and allow the Army recruiters to shut it, that they would be arrested. Although previously he had been unwilling to go on the record regarding his position on the war, he tells protesters that he is opposed to the war and that if they go downstairs to the designated protest area, he will join them out front.
We've had a lot of complaints from the tenants in the building about you all being here in this space. So on behalf of them, I'm asking you all to go out front to the designated protest area. The recruiting office here would like to close their door. They have a right to close their door. So on behalf of them, I'm asking you to clear the doorway so that they can close their door. Please,
sir.
Final request, politely, please clear the area. Thank you.
Could I respond?
You may, but I've said what I had to say.
Sometimes.
And what you have to say is.
Sometimes people have to get a little uncomfortable in order to do the right thing.
You
and we are here.
We've allowed you to come up here and have your peace and try to say what you wanted to say to the recruiters. You've been here for over an hour. I think he's heard what you've had to say. Secondly, I will say, you guys did get a permit for this protest. That was good. So my understanding is that it was until 2 o'clock. It's after 2 o'clock. Your time's up on that. So you've had your say. Move out front to the designated protest area. That's where the visibility is. People are going to see you out there. They're not seeing you here.
Okay.
Well, we hear that. I hear you. I understand what you're saying.
To tell our children.
I understand what you're saying.
Our grandchildren, that it's wonderful to put on a uniform.
I have children, too, and I sympathize.
And it's wonderful to put on it. And they think, they even tell them that they're going to Iraq to protect us.
It's tragic.
Even the bombing. As if the bombing were protecting us.
It's horrible.
Bombing kills. And we've just been reading the names of all the people who were killed in Iraq. It's terrible. And all the people.
I am. I believe in what you're doing.
Do you not support the war?
I do not support the war.
Wow. Thank you.
Now, I would love to join you out front. And in fact, if you would please clear the doorway, I will join you out front. Gladly.
Wow. All right.
Because I don't want to have you guys arrested. Please don't make me do that. I really don't want to do that.
Why don't you go join the folks out front and give them a little support?
I am. I'm on my way there, right behind you guys.
Yeah.
I'm right behind you, okay?
And I'll continue my speech in here for the other
people. How
about
you guys lead the way out front?
You don't seem to need this speech, so you can go outside, and I'll go ahead reading this now.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's your final warning. Yeah. The officer's going to step up right now, and he's going to inform you of some information.
We're raging because
I'm stepping out of it. So
tricking our grandchildren.
All right.
Trying
to
see you out front, maybe.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Go out front.
Appreciate your support.
Let's go.
Thank you.
Okay. I, Andrew Daly of the Capitol Police Department, declare this to be an unlawful assembly, and I order you, in the name of the people of the state of California, to immediately disperse. If you do not disperse immediately, you shall be arrested for violation of Section 407 of the California Penal Code, unlawful assembly, and for violation of Section 409 of the California Penal Code, remaining present at an unlawful assembly.
After Todd Matthews of the building management company and Capitola Police warned protesters that if they did not go down to the designated protest area, they would be arrested, Ellie Foster, an 81-year-old member of the Raging Grannies, one of the 10 later arrested, read a statement.
It's the government of the people. That's our government. We're asking it to turn now to stop the lies and to stop the aggression. And to learn how to get along, how to turn to peace, and that's a big thing. We could be sending peace envoys to all the countries. But that's the only way that the human race can continue, is to move into that. And when peace envoys, they can even send us as grannies. We're willing to go to Iraq. And if we go to Iraq, we can cry with the grannies there in Iraq. And with their children, and comfort their children, and cradle their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, That's something we can do. We can learn the ways of peace. But the way to peace is a way of truth. And it's a way, the way to peace is peace. It's our way.
That's right.
Okay, so this will be the second reading. I, Andrew Daly, the Capitol Police Department, declare this to be an unlawful assembly. And I order you in the name of the people of the state of California to immediately disperse. If you do not disperse immediately, you shall be arrested for violation of Section 407 of the California Penal Code, unlawful assembly, and violation of 409 of the California Penal Code, remaining present at an unlawful assembly. There will be one final reading before we start arresting, so this is your final warning.
Can you tell us how far away we have to disperse to?
Can you let this gentleman through, please?
Yes.
I'm sorry, how far do they say we have to go?
We have to go to the free speech area in the front of the building. Is that correct?
After the second warning by the Capitola police that if protesters did not move down to the so-called designated protest area, they would be arrested, the Raging Grannies and others stayed put and sang songs before the third and final warning, an arrest began.
I'm not sure what's going on here. Are they going to arrest all of us?
I don't think they want to.
Brothers and sisters, are we? Bring the troops home and let's have harmony. Let peace begin with me. Let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be our solemn vow, to take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me and us and everyone else who wants to bring the troops home and end this illegal, immoral war.
With Raging Grannies singing our song, doo-dah, doo-dah. With the Raging Grannies singing our song, oh, the doo-dah day. Gone rage and roar, gone stop our war. With Raging Grannies singing our song, oh, the doo-dah day. With Raging Grannies singing doo-doo-doo-dah, doo-dah. When we ask you to join our peace call too, all the doo-dah day. Gonna roar all night, gonna rage all day. Gonna put our money on a better world. Let's make a start today.
Can we do it one more time?
Okay. With the Raging Grannies singing our song, doo-dah, doo-dah.
1 minute.
With Raging Grannies singing our song all the doo-dah day. Gonna rage and roar, gonna stop a war. With the Raging Grannies singing our song all the doo-dah day. With the Raging Grannies singing to you, doo-dah, doo-dah. Because we want you to join us peaceful too, all the doo-dah day. Gonna rage all night, gonna roar all day. Gonna put our money on a better world. Let's make a start today.
20 seconds. After the third and final warning, Capitola police moved in and began making arrests. Many of those arrested were members of the local chapter of the Raging Grannies, and they ranged in age from 63 to 90 years old. Among them was Ellie Foster, an 81-year-old woman who was led away with her walker. Also arrested was David Hoffendahl and his 16-year-old son Trevor, who were inside the recruitment center speaking with Army recruiter Andrew Bobo. The protesters were arrested for failure to disperse, failure to obey a lawful order, and taking part in an unlawful assembly. They were taken to the Capitola police station and later released. As they were led away, they sang, and other protesters applauded them.
Last night I had the strangest dream I ever dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war. I dreamed I saw a mighty room filled with women and men. Were dismantled all over the ground. Last night I had the strangest dream I ever dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war. I dreamed I saw a mighty room filled with women and men, and the papers they were signing said they never fight again. And when the papers were all signed and a million copies made, we all joined hands and bowed our heads and grateful prayers were.
And this has been a report on the peace rally that took place on June 26, 2007, at the Military Recruitment Office on 41st Avenue in Santa Cruz. It is not known at this time what the next steps of the protesters that were arrested or the organizers of the protest will be. And I'm going to end with a song that was performed earlier in the day at the rally by local musicians Russell Boucher, who was among the 10 later arrested, and Suzanne Lang.